Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
On Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. I am just a dude.
Had a hectic day at the office today.
Was, huh?
Yeah. Was busy.
Yeah?
Lots of lawyering going on.
Well, that's good. Have them all lawyer up on you.
Yep.
That's how you get money. That's what makes that money tree grow more. The more lawyering and the more busy you get.
That's right.
That's watering that money tree.
The important thing whenever you have a law office and you're trying to make that money tree grow is you have to have a law office that is a pleasant place to work.
That's right. You don't want any hostility, do you?
You do not want any hostility.
Save that for the courtroom.
Exactly. Hey, wait a second. You don't have hostility in the courtroom. That does not play well in front of a jury. Trust me.
They're all gentlemen there.
That's right. And gentlewomen. Gentlewomen. Gentle people.
Like Little Women? I think they're remaking that. I think I saw a clip on Entertainment Tonight where they're remaking that.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see the last one.
Well, I tell you what.
Didn't have like Winona Ryder in it, I think?
Yeah, I think so. I think the other one did. This one doesn't, though. I don't believe. I had a great experience this weekend. Mary and I went to Louisville together and enjoyed a weekend away for our 40th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
Well, thanks. It was a blast. We went on one of those bourbon trail tours, and I learned so much about bourbon that I did not know.
Really?
Yeah, I am a walking bourbon encyclopedia at this point. I love useless facts, and I just have a whole new category of useless facts now to do with bourbon.
I am like a walking bourbon...
Drinker.
I guess you could say.
A reverse fountain?
Yeah, reverse. Well, hopefully. Unless I've had way too much bourbon, what do I turn into a reverse bourbon fountain?
But we had a blast. Louisville is a great town. Lots to do there. And we had a day to kill, so we did a little day drinking, which I haven't done any day drinking in a long time. And that was brought back memories. So.
Day drinking leads to early bedtimes.
But it didn't. I don't know what happened. Somehow in my older age, I just kept going.
You hit the perfect window.
And then just stopped drinking and watched TV that evening, and everything was fine. Everything just returned to normal.
You must have had that perfect mixture of alcohol, food, sleep, hydration.
I guess. I don't know. I just went along with whatever. It was the guys like, oh, Sunday afternoon and you're here drinking? Okay, well, we got happy hour all day long. I'm like, okay, well, what are your specials? Well, we have lawnmower beers. Bring me a lawnmower beer.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know what a lawnmower beer was.
It's like a beer you drink while you're mowing the lawn, so it's not very strong and super refreshing.
Yeah, it was just a local beer that they sell you in a can. And then they had another one. It was cold beer and a shot. Mm. They don't name the beer and they don't name the shot. They just, whatever they pick. So it was a Miller High Life and Rebel Yell. So that was fine.
Yeehaw.
Yeah, it reminded me of my high school days.
Sounds a little scary.
But anyway, back to the hostility.
Yes, back to the hostility. I did have a question to ask you about bourbon. But
oh, well, ask me. I've got the answer.
What is the difference between bourbon and whiskey?
Bourbon and whiskey, it comes down to the mixture of the grains as well as what grains it contains.
I'd always heard that bourbon consisted mainly of corn.
It has to have, by law, 51% corn. It also has barley, and then the other ingredient is one of two things, either rye or wheat. Rye makes it spicier. Now, most of your whiskeys are done with rye. Some of your bourbons are done with wheat in there instead. But it can have up to 95% corn, but it's got to be at least 51% corn. Can only have those ingredients that I said in it, and it has to be in the barrel for minimum of 2 years.
2 years barrel aged.
Right. And that the whole barrel thing is a fascinating thing in and of itself. They can only be put in virgin barrels.
Oh, really?
Yep. You can only use that barrel one time. Once you take the bourbon out of it, it's usually sold in an aftermarket over in Europe where it's used to barrel up their whiskey and things like that.
I know they do some beer.
They do beer. They do some wines.
Yeah, some wines.
Bourbon barrel age. But a barrel may have 80 to 90 years of usefulness, and they're all handcrafted. Do you know what a guy that makes barrels is called?
A cooper.
Correct. A cooper.
I did know that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And there's no glue or adhesive or grooves or anything on these things. They are just planks that are just forced together with the copper bands or the metal bands. Mm-hmm. And if they have any problems with them leaking, they'll pull them out. They'll dump the bourbon in a tank, and then they use cattail reeds to fill in the spaces where it's leaking and put it back together because it has to be all natural.
Cattail reeds, huh? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because it has to be all natural. You can't put glue or anything like that in there, any kind of filler or anything.
So I imagine there's some market for cattail reeds to be sold.
Well, like these guys, they were saying, well, we've got them growing right over here on the property. We just go grab a handful.
Oh, really? They just fell back.
Just go grab a handful.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Here's another thing I never do. All the trees on the property around where they had these, what they call rick houses, is where they store the bourbon to let it age. Rick house may contain 20,000 barrels. And while it's aging, of course, its alcohol is evaporating out of these barrels. That's called the angel share, mm-hmm. what goes up in the air. All the trees on the property around where these rick houses are, they're all black.
Oh, really?
It turns the bark black on the tree. Whatever kind of tree it is, it's still got black bark. Now, it's not killing it. It just discolors the bark because of the alcohol.
Hmm.
So you've got the angel share that evaporates, and then do you know what the reverse of that is?
The devil's cut?
The devil's cut. That's the bourbon that's absorbed into the wood of the barrel. So when you put these other things in, it pulls the devil's cut back out.
I've heard these terms before.
Yeah.
I'm not a bourbon expert, though, but I've heard the terms before.
Well, I'm an expert now.
Yeah, you are. You did a weekend crash course.
It was great. I enjoyed learning.
Now, when you taste the bourbon in the morning and things like that, do you spit it out like you do with wine?
Oh, hell no.
I didn't think so.
No. We started morning drinking there. We went to the first place, and we were there. I guess it started at 9:15. We were probably 10 o'clock at the first place.
Yeah. Drinking bourbon at 10 a.m.
Drinking bourbon at 10 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean,
sometimes that's called a problem.
Well, this was called a vacation. But it was good. And once you learn the different things, you know that burning sensation sometimes when you drink bourbon, you feel it down in your chest?
Yeah.
That's called a Kentucky hug.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard that phrase before.
Yeah.
Do you know what a Kentucky waterfall is?
Is that peeing off the side of the mountain?
No, it's a haircut.
Oh, okay.
It's a mullet.
Oh, I didn't know that. Billy Ray Cyrus made that famous, though, from Ashland, Kentucky.
The Kentucky waterfall is a mullet.
Yeah.
All right, so this episode is about hostile work environments. This topic was suggested by one of our listeners on our Facebook page. Christopher Steer suggested we do an episode on this because I don't think we've touched on some of these topics before, but we've never done dedicated strictly to this.
I don't think so either. And I could have said that last name too. That's one I could have pronounced.
You want to try it?
Steer.
Oh, that was wrong.
Ah, darn it. Missed again.
We always love when people give us suggestions on the Facebook page. It's always fun to hear from our listeners and have suggestions because it makes our job fun because we know we're giving you topics that you want to hear about.
Yeah, and it works out better for us too because there's a lot of times we're sitting there thinking, we got to have a topic, Mike. We got to have a topic. What are we going to talk about? So you guys help us out there with that.
Also, one other kind of plug. If you haven't had a chance to rate us or give us a review on iTunes, we sure would love for you to do that. It lets us know that we're doing kind of a passable job and not just filling your day with 30 minutes of drivel. So
yeah, we hate when that happens.
Yeah, that's not fun. So yeah, give us a review. We'd appreciate it. So what is a hostile work environment?
Well, do you want my thoughts or do you want the exact definition?
Well, it's one of those things that's kind of a term of art. So you can't really just look at the words themselves, like generally what hostile work and environment mean. Individually,
there are specific things involved.
Yeah, just because someone's mean to you or hostile towards you does not mean that, you know, it's basically a hostile work environment, or if they just have poor communication skills. It's kind of a term of art which meets certain criteria.
All right, and it's associated with like Title VII?
It is. So basically, we're talking about U.S. labor law because I assume they have similar things in Europe. I'm not really certain, but I would assume so.
No, they go around harassing each other all the time. I think it's okay over there. They just call it willy-nilly.
Willy-nilly?
Yeah. I don't think, be confused with woolly-bully.
I don't think there's any willy-nilly going on. I don't think that's allowed.
I say there, sir. I believe you're being hostile to me. I must report you at once to the Prime Minister.
Directly to the Prime Minister? Is that how that works?
Yes, we don't mess around over here. The Prime Minister himself will handle it.
So, a hostile work environment in the U.S. exists when someone's behavior within a workplace creates an environment that is difficult or uncomfortable for another person to work in due to discrimination. So, your general complaints about hostile work environments can involve sexual harassment. That can be like actual touching that was not allowed to. Sexually suggestive photos, sexual language, possibly off-color jokes. It could be anything that might be intimidating, hostile, or offensive to a reasonable person. And this is one of those things you're going to see pop up a lot when we're talking about this is reasonable person. It's one of these kind of reasonable person type standards. And basically, if this goes on at a workplace, an employer can be held liable for failing to prevent these different kind of workplace things that happen. That's where people generally sue. They don't sue the person necessarily who is harassing them. They sue the company because the company is the one who should have prevented it to begin with.
And there's kind of two different ways it can take form. It can be a supervisor or an owner or somebody that's presenting the hostile work environment, or it can be a coworker, and both of those need to be handled kind of in a different manner. Because the one is somebody directly responsible for the company. The other is, you have to make the company aware of it.
Yeah, if you have a coworker who is creating a hostile work environment for you and you never actually go report it to HR or supervisor or anything like that, that could bar your claim against them because, I mean, really, what is a company supposed to do? How are they supposed to know what's going on if you don't tell them about it?
That's right. You can't fix what you don't know.
Exactly. Now, there are some exceptions if it is a supervisor or the boss or things like that as far as, like, reporting it because at that point, you have almost like a kind of a intimidation type factor going on. So there might be instances where you don't report it, but your claim's not going to be barred because of the kind of action that was taking place.
Right.
So that would be the differences. So in addition to creating a hostile work environment, generally there has to be some sort of discriminatory purpose in it a lot of times. And basically, discrimination is one of those things that is monitored and guided by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, also called the EEOC, which was created by the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Have you heard of the EEOC?
I have. I have heard of that before.
How have you heard of it?
Well, when I worked for the railroad, we had training in the EEOC.
Railroad stories.
Yeah, because even the railroad has to maintain proper work environment. And the railroad had a lot of troubles with that, to tell you the truth. They settled a big lawsuit a while back with minority discrimination in promotions and stuff like that. And it was a big, big lawsuit that got distributed to a lot of people that had for years not been considered for promotions, and they felt it was racially promoted. The other thing was, for most of the beginning of the railroad, it was all men working on the railroad.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until probably the 60s or 70s before women started becoming a regular part of the workforce, and they really didn't even let them in train and engine service until probably the 90s. They just said, look, they're not capable physically, they're not capable of handling this type of work. Mm-hmm. So when women started coming on a railroad and, you know, a predominantly male-dominated business, of course there was problems because a lot of the guys didn't like it, and then a lot of the guys just didn't know how to conduct themselves correctly.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things probably where back then they would make kind of explicit jokes or things like that.
Right.
And it didn't really bother anybody because everyone was kind of, you know, male.
Oh, yeah.
So it wasn't a big deal. But then you bring somebody with a different sensitivity in there, and they are more sensitive to that kind of thing. So, you know, it shouldn't have been going on to begin with. But if a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, then does it really fall?
I know when I was 18.
Yes, it still falls.
It does fall, yes. I know when I was 18 years old, I got a job with the railroad as a track person. Mm-hmm. And we would travel around. It was a tie force, but replacing ties on the railroad. And most of the guys in the group that I was with, they were all Vietnam veterans. You know, and you can imagine, you know, the way the language was and the stories that were told and things like that. These were not guys, you know, from just down the street. They've been around the world and seen a lot of things that maybe you didn't want to see and stuff like that. So, yeah. You know, it was, there were no women on the TIE Force. We were out there working, you know, it was like being in the military or something.
The TIE Force, that sounds like some sort of Star Wars thing.
It could have been, but it wasn't. We were on World War II troop transport cars.
Didn't you do that for like one summer?
I did it. Well, I did one summer on the TIE Force and one summer in a yard gang.
The TIE Force and the yard gang.
Yep.
So before we go any further, I think we might have a couple motions pending before the court today.
Well, I know we got one. If we have two, then I'm out of the loop. But we do. We'd like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right. Well, who do we have on the docket? Because I think there's only one.
That's good. That's all my docket has.
Sometimes these dockets get a little mixed up.
Yeah, sometimes these dockets do. Nope. Darn dockets. What we have on the docket, sleep number.
Now, everybody knows that sleep is important.
Very.
But consider someone you know who is in the military or a veteran. Imagine how much a good night's sleep means to them.
From military heroes to everyday heroes, the new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed helps everyone get the proven quality of sleep that will change their life.
Now, a lot of couples disagree on a mattress's firmness. Some people like it firm. Some people like it soft. Some people may even like it lumpy.
Well, if it's lumpy, you might have another problem.
Sleep Number beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side, so it's just right for you.
The new beds are so smart, they sense your every move and automatically adjust to you, keeping you sleeping comfortably throughout the night.
Now, I don't think Sleep Number beds have a lumpy setting, because beds are not supposed to be lumpy.
No, I would not think so.
And these are high-quality beds that are not lumpy.
Absolutely, they're high-quality beds and not lumpy, because no one would want a lumpy bed or a lumpy setting.
That's right.
Or lumpy from Leave It to Beaver.
If you come in right now during the Veterans Day sale, you'll save $400 on a Queen Sleep Number 360 C4 Smart Bed. Now only $1,299. Plus, there's exclusive savings reserved for military and veterans.
So you think that Queen Sleep Number 360 C4 has anything to do with the new movie coming out about Queen right now? Or is that just a coincidence?
I think it's just a coincidence. And I don't think it has anything to do with C4 explosives either.
I thought that was kind of strange that the C4 is in there and it's a military special. So I wondered about that.
The military grade C4 mattress.
When one of the settings is explode. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide.
Visit sleepnumber.com/court to find one nearest you.
And you can learn more about home, wellness, and tech from the leader in #smartersleep by visiting the Sleep Number blog at blog.sleepnumber.com. So Mike and Tommy say, nighty night now.
Sleep well, little buddies.
My little buckaroo.
So basically, if you have a coworker and they're talking loudly, they're snapping their gun,
they're snapping their gun, they've gone postal.
That is hostile. If they're snapping their gum, they lean over your desk, they're demonstrating inappropriate, rude, or obnoxious behavior, but it does not create a hostile work environment. But if somebody is basically telling you sexually explicit jokes and sends around images of naked people or pornography or things like that.
Or naked animals.
Naked animals. Bestiality. It's the technical term for that.
Naked animals or bestiality? There's a lot of them on the street, I mean, on the road or to pass by on the countryside.
Oh, you're talking about just flat-out naked animals?
Yeah.
How do you know if
they're I didn't mean they were doing anything.
Oh, well, see, I said pornography and then you said animals.
But I said naked animals.
Oh. Okay, this is where my mind went. Back off. You're creating a hostile work environment here for me, Tom.
Have you seen the Shark Tank where Jimmy Kimmel comes in and presents his idea for horse pants?
No.
So that horses won't be naked in public anymore?
But anyway, yeah, if you send just naked animal pictures, that might not be harassment because they're usually naked anytime, all the time anyway.
Okay. So. Well, in cartoons, they're sometimes in various states of dress. They're either wearing pants or tops.
That's true.
Sometimes both. Other times one or the other, which is very confusing for children.
Well, it's like the age-old question between Goofy and Pluto. They're both dogs. One wears pants, the other doesn't.
That's right.
What's up with that?
I don't know.
These are things that keep me up at night.
Inquiring minds want to know.
I've been talking about actual cases I've had and discrimination, sexual harassment, things like that. I actually had a case one time where a supervisor continually made jokes about my client being gay. He actually wasn't gay, but he kept making these kinds of jokes to him about it. And
based to the client?
Yeah, to my client.
Really?
Yeah, and based upon that, we filed an EEOC claim, and we were actually able to settle it and resolve it because he couldn't work there anymore because it created a hostile work environment for him because of all these like kind of jokes and things the guy was saying.
Well, now, that's one of the things, too, that I wondered about this, because it says that the person filing the complaint must be a member of, you know, a classification that would fall into a minority or something like that.
A protected class?
Yeah, protected class. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So you have to fall into one of those categories. So, I mean, in my mind, just, you know, trying to reason these things out. So if you had all white guys working in an office and they were teasing each other and making jokes about things, stuff, none of them could file a harassment suit on the other one, whether they liked it or not, because they don't fall in a protected category. I mean, if it wasn't anything specific or, like you say, teasing them about them being homosexual and they weren't or something like that.
Yeah.
As long as it wasn't something like that, then you couldn't call it a hostile work environment because you're not part of a protected group.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I think there's going to be some sort of cause of action. But generally speaking, your standard hostile work environment claim does involve somebody of a protected class. That's your standard run-of-the-mill vanilla hostile work environment case, somebody to protect a class. I can't think that basically if you had a super homogeneous type workforce like that that was not protected class that you would be somehow free from having any kind of...
Anything goes.
Yeah, I'm not buying that.
Well, I'm always looking for the devil's advocate. It's like, okay, so if it has to be protected, does that mean that something like that can occur?
No, it can occur. And you could still be sued for it.
Okay.
So, I mean, if that...
So, if someone just found it offensive, then maybe it's on basis of religion. I don't talk like that, or we don't see those kind of pictures right. or something
if,
like that.
You know, if you're a reasonable person, and this goes back to the reasonable person standard, you know, if it is the harasser's conduct is evaluated basically from an objective standpoint of a reasonable person. So, that's kind of the basis for it. So, you try to be a reasonable person in that person's shoes and be objective about whether or not that person would find it offensive or whether or not it would create a hostile work environment. So I think even if somebody wasn't in a protected class, there's still going to be some sort of cause of action or some sort of repercussions for doing that. So,
well, it says the United States Supreme Court stated in Oncale v. Sundowner Offshore Services that Title VII is not a general civility code. Thus, federal law does not prohibit simple teasing, offhand comments, or isolated incidents that are not extremely serious. Rather, the conduct must be so objectionably offensive as to alter the condition of the individual's employment.
Yep.
Well, I'm just saying that I think this term gets thrown around, like you say, that when you just say hostile work environment, and people have a thing that, you know, hey, this guy, I don't like this guy, or this guy's mean to me, or something like that. Yeah. And that's a hostile work environment. And there are certain things that are, you know, you have to prove to make it so.
Well, according to the EEOC website, workplace harassment situations, the perspective of a reasonable person is one aspect of the criteria used to determine whether a work environment is hostile. The reasonable person standard aims to avoid the potential for parties to claim they suffered harassment when most people would not find such instances offensive if they themselves were the subject of such acts. Basically, in determining whether harassment is sufficiently severe or pervasive to create a hostile work environment, the harasser's conduct should be evaluated from the objective standpoint of a reasonable person. Title VII does not serve as a vehicle for vindicating the petty slights suffered by the hypersensitive, according to Zabkowitz v. West Bend Co., which was a federal case from Wisconsin. Basically, if the challenged conduct would not substantially affect the work environment of a reasonable person, no violation should be found.
Yeah, they say it has to be something that, in effect, changes the term of your employment contract.
Yeah.
The terms of it, that it's made it something you're having to tolerate or put up with something that was not contemplated when you were hired.
According to the EEOC website, they give an example. So, supposedly, somebody who is harassed, the charging party, they allege that this is gonna, for the purpose of this, it's going to be a woman, that her coworker made repeated unwelcome sexual advances toward her. The investigation disclosed that the alleged advances consisted of invitations to join a group of employees who regularly socialized at dinner after work. The coworker's invitations, viewed in that context and from the perspective of a reasonable person, would not have created a hostile work environment and therefore could not constitute sexual harassment. So basically, just if you're asking somebody to come out and have dinner with a group of people after work, a bunch of coworkers, that's not going to create a hostile work environment.
Now, if you invite them to your house for drinks and bring your pajamas, then that might be construed as maybe hostile.
Yeah, or if you turn it even further and say, hey, we're going to go out for drinks, let's all go together, and afterwards...
I'll give you a ride.
Yeah. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Or you can give me a ride. Wink, mm-hmm. wink, nudge, nudge. I got some Monty Python. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But yeah, that would fall into a hostile work environment.
But simply inviting them to an after-hours employee gathering is not something that would be considered hostile.
No. You know, and that's basically, again, if you go back to the reasonable person standard, a reasonable person would not find that to be creating a hostile work environment or find that harassing. Now, you might come across somebody who maybe is somehow hypersensitive about something like that. So basically think that maybe they went to previously with their old job, they had gone to some after work party or something like that and had been assaulted or something like that. So they were very sensitive to that.
So they would group the two together.
Yeah, they would be like, oh my gosh, this person's doing this. They would, you know, but that's not necessarily the reasonable person standing there, because that coworker might not have any idea about this, and that would be kind of out of the ordinary. So,
you know, you mentioned that, and it's kind of one of those things we've talked about in some other subjects on our episodes, where the standards of what's acceptable or what was tolerated, or however you want to look at it, from history has changed so much to now. I mean, like, you think about, they have these, you know, they have jokes and they have these pictures of these Christmas parties that companies used to throw. I don't know when they did these things, because I've never seen it done anywhere, but you see these where they had these Christmas parties.
People sitting on the copier.
Yeah, and making pictures of their butt, and everybody's drinking to excess, and, you know, end up with people joining together in the closet or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, no one would ever, I don't think, hold any kind of office Christmas party that had anything like that going on.
No, they would be opening themselves up to tremendous amounts of liability doing something like that.
So a lot of those things just get thrown to the wayside. And you know, even the whole idea of training your staff so that, you know, as a preventative measure, so you don't get claims, you know, from coworkers doing it to coworkers or whatever, or your managerial staff doing it. They institute classes and stuff, training people on it. I know that a few years back, I was asked to help participate in, you know, with my great community acting skills, they asked me to participate in a film they were making that was about workplace, you know, sexual harassment and stuff like that, what not to do, what not to do, how to handle these things and stuff like that.
And they figured out, who can we ask to show what not to do? Only one name came to mind.
No, actually, they had me into one, and I was being harassed by my female supervisor.
Oh.
So that was what I was in. But to give us flavor, they said, we're trying to make this kind of realistic and not laughable. To show you what we're up against, here's one that was made several years back. And when we look at it now, you know, it can't even be taken seriously. So they put in this videotape and played it for us to watch to see what the one was that they don't want us being like.
Yeah.
And guess who was in that one that was going around sexually harassing everybody?
Who?
Clint McElroy. They had gotten him to do it several years back. Now, of course, it wasn't him actually sexually harassing people. He was playing
surveillance footage.
But, you know, talk about over the top. Hey, baby, what's going on? Honk, honk, you know. And, of course, Clint, he's such a bigger-than-life character anyway. And those of you who don't know, I'm talking about Clint McElroy, the father of the brothers McElroy from a Bim Bam.
Yeah.
But he was in that. But it was so funny when they turned it on and everybody else that was in there with me, they knew who Clint was too. So we turned on and said, here's Nap. This is what we don't want. And it was Clint. We had a great laugh about that.
We don't want to be comedic.
Yeah.
Well, real life scenarios.
Yeah, we want this serious. We don't want people rolling their eyes at it.
Those videos, I've seen a few of them. Because usually when you start a new job or something like that, you have to watch videos like that or different things. And they're very hard to make, I think.
Because, they are.
You know, you watch them and it's just like, oh, that's – I don't think that maybe the acting in them or just the scenarios presented seems so outlandish.
Well,
those things do actually happen, though. People do act like that.
And some of it is probably – it's that buffoonish that people actually do that kind of stuff. They're that – stupid or naive, whatever it is, that they do some of those things. But I think that for the most part, a lot of it is a little more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where it builds up to a certain point where, and some people, I think it almost happens to them before they know it. Not the ones doing it, but the ones that's getting done too.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to jump to the conclusion and automatically just assume as soon as somebody says something that might be suggestive that that's what's going on. You know, you don't want to jump to that as the first thing. You'd like to give people the benefit of the doubt if you're going to be working there with them, that they respect you as a coworker, and they wouldn't come over and do something like that. And then when they do something like that again, then you got to say, oh, well, now. And so then it gets to the point where it starts building up, you know.
Yeah. Some different things that can create hostile work behaviors or hostile work environments. Sexual activity discussion, that's kind of a no-brainer. Physical comments. You know, aside from, oh, you look nice today or something like that. You know, I mean, even then, that's still kind of like, you know.
I'm like, your breasts look particularly large in that shirt.
Yeah, that's...
That would probably be a no-no.
That would be a no-no.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all saying like, oh, I like your suit today. I mean, that would probably be appropriate. But even
though, I wouldn't even say that.
I would not even do that.
No.
But to a reasonable person, you know, I think that's probably okay as long as it's not like, I like your suit today, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
I mean, the best I would do is say, you look adequate today.
Yes, exactly. You look very adequate.
I wouldn't comment at all. I would do that.
Dressed appropriately for the work which you were here to perform today.
I mean, the only time I've ever talked to anybody about dress is like when I had a guy come in that was going to go to a customer's place maybe to pick up some boxes to bring back, and he's in cutoffs in a T-shirt that has a bad word on it or something like that. You know, it's like, you can't go out dressed like that. What's the matter with you?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, I probably err more on your side there. I don't ever comment about stuff like that.
Nope. So. He didn't even notice that I have a new hairdo. Nope. Not going to comment on that.
Offensive jokes about sex, race, or disability. Sexually suggestive pictures. Unneeded touching. Demeaning terms. Rude gestures. Inappropriate language. Here's one you might not think about. Work sabotage. So if you go into like some sort of shared directory and you erase their files or something like that, so you do that to kind of humiliate them or screw with them or mess with them, that can create a hostile work environment too.
Well, I think another one that people overlook because they think it's harmless is like either jokes with bad words in them or sexually explicit cartoons or something like that. You know, there's a lot of times people get in a trap of somebody that you know sends you the email with it and you forward it to some people or a group of people or something like that, and you don't think anything about it. But remember that one, was it a Supreme Court judge or something like that, a state Supreme Court judge or something, got in trouble because he was in a regular email exchange of dirty jokes with some of the lawyers that came before him and stuff like that.
Yeah, just inappropriate.
So, yeah, you can't do that in the workplace. There's just no place for him. If somebody sends you something like that, the best thing you can do is delete it and say you never saw it.
Well, that would be lying.
Well, that'd be my answer. There's a lot of times where I go through and I don't even open emails. I just delete because it looked like junk to me. It's not anything I'm expecting, so I just delete. So even it might have been in my computer, but I didn't see it.
You're like Schultz.
I know nothing.
Now, whenever you're talking about hostile work environment and things like that, and a lot of these are generally, I would say, most of the ones I've seen have been sexual harassment. Or harassment, depending on how you like to pronounce that word.
If you're English, it's harassment.
I think those are probably the bulk of what you see. You do see a lot of gender, race, religion as well. But I think probably 2-1 to the others you see the sexual harassment. It's just, it's more prevalent. I think that's actually maybe kind of a trend that might be changing a little bit. Like you were saying, as women became more prevalent in different work areas where, you know, possibly they were excluded before for because of stereotypical type reasons, I think there was a lot of sexual harassment that took place during that.
As they were breaking in.
Yeah. But I think now women have been a bit more integrated into those kinds of fields that you don't see as much sexual harassment there. And employers, after being sued repeatedly, are very proactive about it now with having videos and training and things like that too. So
I just don't think people were aware of it.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely still happens. I just don't think it's as prevalent as it used to be. Mm-hmm. You know,
I would hope not.
I'm sure it still happens quite a bit. But whenever you're looking at these sexual harassment cases, one case always pops up, and this is one of the seminal cases. It's Harris v. Forklift Systems. I don't know if you came across that where you're doing kind of research.
I did not see Harris v. Forklift.
Yes.
But I can tell you this. A guy in a forklift will win.
9-0, evidently. It was a U.S. Supreme Court case back in 1993, and they ruled 9-0 that plaintiffs in Title VII workplace harassment suits need not prove psychological injury. However, the court acknowledged that an offensive joke or comment is unlikely to be grounds for sexual harassment suits. A little bit of background about this case. Teresa Harris, she was a rental manager for Forklift Systems, Inc., a company in Tennessee, and she alleged that from 1995 to 1987, the president, Charles Hardy, created a hostile work environment through his abusive, vulgar, and offensive sexual comments and actions. His conduct reportedly included calling Harris a dumbass woman and suggesting they go to the Holiday Inn to negotiate her raise. Yeah. In addition, he also allegedly requested that Harris and other female employees retrieve coins from the front pockets of his pants, and he dropped items on the floor and asked the women to pick them up. After Harris complained to Hardy in 1987, he briefly stopped before resuming the harassment. Later that year, she quit, and she filed a suit claiming that the sexual discrimination violated Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which makes it unlawful for employees to discriminate on the basis of sex, race, religion, or natural origin. So, astonishingly enough, a federal district court found that although Hardy's behavior was offensive, it did not create a hostile work environment. The court held that his conduct did not seriously impact Harris's psychological well-being and thus ruled in favor of Forklift Systems. They appealed it and went to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals actually upheld that. Hmm. So, had a trial, lost.
Went to a higher court.
I don't know if it was a trial or not. May have been summary judgment, but anyway, it was disposed of at the trial court level, got appealed, was upheld. Then it got appealed to the Supreme Court. And on October 13th, 1993, the case was argued before the U.S. Supreme Court, and Justice Sandra Day O'Connor dismissed the requirement, she wrote the majority opinion, and she dismissed the requirement that the harassment caused concrete psychological harm. Instead, the court set forth a standard that takes a middle path between conduct that is merely offensive and that which results in a tangible psychological injury. According to the court, hostile environment violations require both an objective and a subjective dimension. First, O'Connor explained, the conduct must be severe or pervasive enough to create an objectively hostile or abusive work environment. Second, a victim must subjectively perceive the environment to be abusive. So it's kind of a two-part test. Now, they did acknowledge that it was not a very precise test when you're trying to determine whether or not it's hostile or abusive.
Did they say they'd know it when they saw it?
Pretty much. The court basically said that all circumstances should be evaluated, and such conditions include frequency of the conduct, its severity, whether it was physically threatening or was merely an offensive comment, and whether it unreasonably interfered with an employee's work performance. On the basis of those findings, the Supreme Court reversed the Sixth Circuit Appellate Court's decision and held that it had applied an erroneous legal standard, and the case was remanded to be tried again. But the case was actually settled out of court, and no one knows what the terms were. So, But that's one of the cases that is everywhere when you talk about sexual harassment. It's one of the first cases, and they all seem to cite back to that one case.
Well, here's one of the things that I came across that I think is a very true statement. Sexual harassment has less to do with sex than with the power disparity and misogyny.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, and that is true. And that's, you know, like this guy, I mean, I don't know the details of this case, but this guy felt like he's the boss. He probably talked in bad ways to guys as well. You know, if he called her a dumbass woman, I'm sure that he called guys that worked there at a forklift place.
Yeah.
He probably called them worse, you know.
Yeah.
And things like that. So I'm not saying that's okay. But what I'm saying is he said it to the guys, but they weren't in a protected group. When he says it to the woman, it was, you know, it was something else. But it's all about his power. Well, he's proving, I have power over you. I can do this. I can call you what I want. I can say what I want, you know, and you have nothing. There's nothing you can do about it.
But I doubt he asked male employees to go to the Holiday Inn to talk about the raise.
No.
I doubt that he asked them to stick their hand down his pocket to retrieve coins, or that he dropped things from Ben, had them bend over and pick up.
No, but do you think it's maybe a stretch that he might have suggested some of these guys, hey, why don't you send your wife over to my house tonight and I'll talk to her about your raise?
No, he probably would do something like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's the same, a guy like that.
Yeah.
It's all about the power,
right,
is what I'm saying. It's not about the sex. Yes, she endured that because she was a woman, but he probably talked that way to most of his employees.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain type of ignorance that people that think it's okay to do that because you own a company or have a little bit of money or something like that, you know?
So you look at me, big man, I own a forklift company.
Yeah.
I can lift things up and put them down with a forklift.
We can lift any forking thing you got.
One other kind of cause of action that is kind of interesting thing that's kind of popping up more and more now is kind of a blend, and it's between a retaliatory hostile work environment. So basically where you are some sort of like whistleblower, where you see something that's going on,
right,
and you report it, and then based upon you reporting that, then they treat you differently and create a hostile work environment for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be kind of a very interesting area of law, because you kind of have two different theories competing there. You have the hostile work environment analysis, which you're looking at the Title VII and things like that, but then you also have whistleblower protections as well. So a lot of times I think some whistleblowers have not been afforded the same protections under the Title VII because they don't fit under one of those kind of criteria.
Right, and they may not fall into a protected category.
Exactly. So, but they still should be afforded those same kind of protections.
Well, the line between generic harmlessness or isolated joking and ridicule or mockery of a person because of his or her protected status is typically reasonably clear. But in a recent case decided by the EEOC, an employee was awarded $166,500 because he was subjected to routine teasing by his manager and the company's human resource director. In another case, a woman was awarded approximately $8 million after a jury concluded that because she was a woman, she was subjected to regular and egregious tormenting by coworkers, including being trapped in a porta potty for 20 minutes on a hot day, routinely shown pictures of naked women, ridiculed because she was working in a male-dominated industry, regularly forced to clean up chewing tobacco spit. The multiple ways she was targeted and treated differently over a long duration of time clearly led to the high verdict.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. It weighs into, in these types of things, not just is it okay or not, but the length and the types of actions that were taken against somebody.
Yeah.
So you get teased a little bit by your manager and the human resource director?
Yeah.
Teased them? What kind of human resource? What credentials did that person have?
They used to work at a forklift company.
I guess so. That's unbelievable. I read that. When your HR person, who are you going to report it to?
Exactly.
Who are you going to call? Harassment busters.
That's all you got?
That's it, I guess.
So a little bit of explanation about the EEOC. So basically, whenever you do have one of these claims, what you do is you first file a claim with the EEOC. And the nice thing about that is that the EEOC will actually conduct their own investigation. And based upon that investigation, they will issue what's called a right to sue letter. And then once you get that right to sue letter, they'll offer mediation. So you can go to mediation and maybe try to settle at that point. Or once you get the right to sue letter, it's almost like a kind of a screening probable cause type determination. Then you can go forward with an actual lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
So the nice thing about it is that the EEOC is very proactive in investigating these things. Whereas if it was up to former employee or an attorney to try to investigate this, they might not get much traction. But when the EEOC comes knocking on your door and they want to investigate it, then the employers tend to kind of perk up and listen and say, oh, geez, we better comply with this.
So, well, I think that you can find the rise in companies caring about, you know, this type of harassment and discrimination, it's directly tied to the formation of the EEOC, I think.
Probably. It's probably linked together.
Yeah, they're the ones. First of all, they gave everybody a remedy of where to go if anything happens. Before then, like you say, what do you do?
Yeah.
Then the other thing is, they gave companies outlines of, if you don't want to be responsible for this, if you don't want to be guilty of this, here's what you need to do. We'll even help you with training films and, you know, give you guidelines and things like that for you to post and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would say that the awareness in general came about with the establishment of the EEOC.
Yeah, I'm sure it's part and parcel.
One of the things that I found was that I work in a hostile work environment because my boss is a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, and this was the one that somebody wrote in. He said, I work in a call center for a software company. Our manager is a real jerk. He often yells at my coworkers and me, telling us to work faster or stop making mistakes in our tracking paperwork. If one of us gets up to go to the bathroom or take a break, he shouts that the company isn't paying us to goof off. Last week, he called us all into a meeting just to berate us for 20 minutes. His face was red and he was cursing, telling us that we had not made our numbers for the past month and that we better get our lazy asses in gear. I find it really stressful to go to work these days. Can my coworkers and I sue the company for a hostile work environment or harassment? And the answer they got was, your work environment does sound quite hostile. Unfortunately for you, however, it doesn't sound like it meets the legal definition of workplace harassment. To sue your employer for harassment under a hostile work environment theory, you must show that you were subjected to offensive, unwelcome conduct that was so severe or pervasive that it affected the terms and conditions of your employment. Getting yelled at all day long could be enough to meet this part of the test. However, you must also prove that the harassment was based on a protected characteristic, such as your race or gender. This is where your legal claim would fall short. Legally speaking, harassment is a form of discrimination. If it is it is illegal only if it is based on one of the characteristics protected by federal or state anti-discrimination laws. So he said, like, if your boss was singling out only women or Latinos for the screaming treatment, that might constitute harassment. However, a boss who yells at everyone, what you might call an equal opportunity harasser, is not discriminating against a particular group. Being a jerk isn't against the law. Inappropriate workplace behavior crosses the line into harassment only if it's based on a protected trait. But they did say, you should report this to your HR manager because this guy is a bad boss.
Yeah.
He may not meet those forms of, you know, harassment, but he's an asshole.
Yeah. And also, I mean, here's the thing, too. It may not meet, like, a lawsuit under that particular Title VII, but it could meet a cause of action for something else.
Well, I'd say that if people lived in that kind of stress, that probably they could offer the mental aspect that they were saying?
Concrete psychological damage.
Yeah, I mean, there's some people who just can't take that kind of stuff, kind of stress.
Well, and a lot of times the remedy, people are like, oh, just find a new job. It's hard finding jobs out there these days.
I mean, you know, on the railroad, you just got used to that stuff. I was sure when I worked in Cincinnati that my boss there thought my first name was Damn It. Because every time I picked up the phone, Damn It, Smurl! Why are you doing this? Why is that going on? So I was just sure that he thought that was my first name.
It's not.
Well, now when I was a kid, I got a lot from my dad. Tommy, Damn It! I thought it was my middle name.
Yeah.
So my bosses called me by the middle name. Now, there are some times that there's some where people wonder whether that might fall under what. Here was one where there was an out-of-town business convention, and it was attended by a female employee. Her employer arranged her attendance and booked her lodging. It seems that she met a local male friend at this convention, and after dining together that evening, they went to her motel room where they had sex. Well, it ended up that the female employee got injured while engaging in sex when a glass light fitting above the bed was pulled from its mount and fell on her, causing injuries to her nose and mouth. So she sued her employer. Now, what it ended up, bizarre enough, but it was held that the court held the employer liable for her injuries, but it was under workers' comp statute because her injuries arose out of or in the course of her employment.
It was intercourse of her employment?
Yes, intercourse of her employment. But I want to know how low was that chandelier or what the hell was going on?
No, when you're reading that, I was like, oh, that sounds like a workers' comp case.
It was. That's what it ended up being. Here was another one where a federal appeals court had a sexual harassment case a few years ago where the plaintiff was a female employee who had worked part-time in a trailer at a construction site. A male employee told her that a large-breasted woman, whom he called Double D, would attend a particular company event, and he asked her whether the size of the women's breasts would be intimidating to her. He later spoke to her about tampons and asked if women get off when using them. He also told her that women were lucky because certain things could happen multiple times that for them that couldn't happen for men. And additionally, he would tell her that she had to clean the trailer, but she should put on a French maid's costume to do it.
Wow, what an idiot.
So, what did the court say about this outrageous behavior? Other than his references to the French maid's costume that he reportedly made the sexual remarks to her on only about four occasions. So, accordingly, the court held that there was no actionable sexual harassment because the evidence will not support a finding that the offensive sexual conduct was so severe and pervasive that it altered the conditions of her employment and created a work environment that a reasonable person would consider hostile or abusive. So, he didn't make enough comments. A few more might have crossed that line, but that wasn't enough.
I'm going to tell you, I disagree with that one. I think that's the one where the court got it wrong. I would appeal that.
You would appeal that?
Yes, I would.
I would too. I think that was absolutely unreasonable. And it was at a construction trailer. So, you know, obviously here's one of those male dominated industries where women came in, because this was several years back and, you know, this kind of thing went on. Here's one that the human resource person wrote in that they got the complaint. It said, "My boss walks by my desk every day, smiles, and says good morning. The way he says it has me convinced that he is trying to hit on me. He always looks me right in the eye, and then he smiles, and I can see his teeth. I would like to make a formal complaint of sexual harassment. I am very happily married and do not need this hostile environment."
Yeah, that's not reasonable.
But can you imagine somebody determining that that is? I mean, an employee interpreting it that way?
Yeah.
So anyway, this HR person said that when an employee starts throwing around words like discrimination or harassment or retaliation or hostile work environment, treat it as a warning. Even if you don't follow the reasoning or whatever, you better take it seriously. If, you know, you're the HR manager or something.
Yeah.
And get her all the information from her. And then the second thing you want to do is find out what she wants to do about it. Because if you tell the supervisor, quit saying good morning to her anymore, then the next thing she's going to do is she's going to come in and she's going to say, he never talks to me. He ignores me. He doesn't even look at me anymore. So, you know, you need to say, okay, now what do you want? Yeah. What do you want this just to stop? Do you want him to not talk to you at all? And stuff like that. So what they're saying is, even ones that may be on the ridiculous side, if you're the HR manager or the owner of a company or something like that, you know, you don't have an HR manager. Some small companies.
Yeah.
You do everything. So, yeah, you are the HR guy.
You make accommodations wherever you can.
Yeah. So take it seriously. Don't just pass it over.
It's always better to be safe than sorry with situations like that.
Yeah. There was one other one that I had where the lady wrote in. This was at a university. And she felt that two other professors, I mean, they were equal to her, one male and one female, were writing emails about her that were insulting to her and stuff like that, even though she didn't have the emails and she didn't even have proof. These were the two that were writing it.
Mm-hmm.
So they made efforts. The HR staff at the university made efforts to try to intercept these emails, try to find where they were coming from and stuff like that. But they were never able to get them. They didn't have the right resources to be able to get to these emails to do it. So she filed the harassment suit and it went to court. And even though they were never able to resolve it, they said that because they put forth the efforts to do what they could to try to solve it within reason, that they were not liable for it. So it says, if you take the right steps to try to alleviate a situation, even if you're not successful, it can still work to your advantage.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, better safe than sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you can in situations like that. Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs. You better keep your briefs on so you don't have sexual harassment, huh?
Making this a hostile podcast. Legal Breeze.
Oh, come on, baby.
Legal Breeze is the part of the podcast where I asked Tommy different legal questions about different terms we used, despite the fact that he is here making this hostile.
You want to see a picture of me in my underwear?
No. No, I do not. The first legal brief is, what does EEOC stand for?
Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
That's right.
Of course it is.
And that is the commission that investigates these different Title VII discrimination claims. Mm-hmm. They're based on race, gender, equality, things like that. Actually, I don't think equality is one of them. But anyway, basically your different Title VII discrimination type claims. What was the standard articulated in Harris v. Forklift Systems?
It was a reasonable person.
That's part of it. Severe or pervasive enough to create an objectively hostile or abusive work environment, and the victim must be subjectively perceive the environment to be abusive. And this is all based on the reasonable person standard.
Okay.
So, but if you remember, if you take nothing else from this podcast and just remember the reasonable person standard, then I think that's going to be, it's going to be a good North Star for you.
Well, there aren't very many reasonable people left these days.
I think there's two in this room.
Oh, yeah.
Because Mary just walked in.
I was going to say, who else is here besides you?
What is the Civil Rights Act of 1964?
It's the one that introduced Title VII?
It is. And also the EEOC, and that's about when that came about, too.
Oh, well, there you go. That's so. When that was the dawn of making that, bringing that to the forefront. Shining the light on those harassment cockroaches, if you will.
That's right. Now, I talked about briefly a different kind of cause of action that was becoming kind of a problem. It had to do with whistleblowers. Remember what I said about that?
That they were being discriminated against, retaliated against.
That's right. And that actually there are whistleblower protections as well, but there could also be some ramifications regarding Title VII and hostile work environment with whistleblower claims as well.
Because you don't fall into a protected category.
Yeah. Or maybe you do. But it's just something to think about there, because it's kind of one of those blurred lines type areas where really a lot of the different things that are happening to people could kind of be considered the same thing, because it's just a hostile work environment that was created basically because you blew the whistle on some sort of behavior that you thought was inappropriate. So
blurred lines like Robin Thicke?
Like Robin Thicke.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a good song.
Yeah. That's what I thought. That has some sexual harassment going on in it, doesn't it?
The video?
Yeah.
I don't know if you would call that sexual harassment or just sexual video.
Somebody's getting harassed somewhere. I'm not sure who. Maybe they're doing it to him.
Yeah, I don't know.
Miley Cyrus isn't in there anywhere, is she?
I don't think so. I don't think she's in that.
She was just on stage with him in that, wasn't it? When she had the big finger. Wasn't he doing that song and she danced with him in that, and they caused all that?
Was that at the Super Bowl or something?
Yeah, I think she was sexually harassing him. No, it wasn't the Super Bowl.
Well, I don't know. I don't keep up with this pop culture stuff.
You don't?
No.
All right, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Where does bourbon get its color from?
I would say bourbon gets its color from the barrels and the tannins that are contained in the wood that are in the barrels.
Close.
Okay.
As the bourbon is made, it's actually a clear liquid. Looks just like moonshine.
Mm-hmm.
It's put in these barrels, but the process to sterilize these barrels so they're clean is they burn the inside of the barrels.
Ah.
So the inside of it is all, you know, torched. So when they put the bourbon in there and it sits and it passes back and forth through that wood, it brings out that color. So if you look at it, you can tell, like if you look at a 2-year-old bourbon and a 10-year-old bourbon, look how much darker the color is on the 10-year-old bourbon because it's been in and out of that barrel more.
I didn't know that.
Well, there you go. So the point to this is make sure you have plenty of bourbon on hand before you sexually harass somebody.
Wrong.
That's not it.
Yeah. No.
Just no.
Drink bourbon at your Christmas parties, holiday parties.
And put everybody in their own room.
That's right.
Individual rooms for everybody.
That's right. Just talk on your phones. Don't look at each other.
Don't even do that.
Just say nice things.
People might sext.
Not too nice.
There's too many ways to do it these days. Just don't talk to anybody. Go away. Everybody work from home.
That would solve it.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I...